You're on.
All right, well, let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, September 24th, 2015. First item on the agenda is approval of minutes for August 27th, 2015.
Motion to approve the minutes at
Motion by Brendan. Second by Curtis. Any comments or changes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approved unanimous. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Seeing no one from the public present, we will move forward to item number four on our agenda, which is municipal code amendments addressing new constrained low-density residential zone.
And there's also an additional handout at your desks. Lynn provided just a few minor additional edits that were not in your packet. Those are shown in yellow highlights. So what this is you recall that we created the new constrained low-density residential zone for areas within the floodplain. The council is now looking at expanding that to some additional properties. But what that means is that we need to then carry that forward throughout our zoning code to establish the bulk and dimensional standards, performance standards, and any other sections of code that would need amendment. So that's what this is. And what our recommendation is that we keep the lot sizes and the bulk and dimensional standards the same as what they would be for the LDR zone. Mm-hmm. So the minimum lot size would still be the same, minimum of 7,500, average minimum of 8,000 square feet for the larger lot size zone. So that means that if you want to do one that's very small, you could do that, or normal size. You could do that in the other lot in your subdivision, would just have to be very large. And the idea of that is that's called shadow planning. So should something change in the future, should the zoning change in the future, you're already kind of lined up so that you could subdivide that other larger property without having to rearrange or lose houses, or so that your home is properly situated for future growth.
Where is that used in King County?
I know that King County does use it.
In the, you know where?
Probably primarily in a lot of urban growth areas. So prior to annexation, they have what's called an urban reserve zone. And I think that's frequently done within urban reserve zones to line up for future annexation and growth.
Is there any area around here that we can?
I don't know of anything in Snoqualmie Valley. I know there's a lot of areas near my parents' house in Kent that have done that. They've developed urban densities in certain areas, reserving other parts of the subdivision for when annexation would occur and maybe the rest of it.
The problem I see with that, my visualization is that over time, building standards change to what the existing neighborhood is, and I can visualize a home being platted into an empty lot being totally different than the community than the neighborhood that it's in. Would that be tolerated?
Explain a little bit further. Are you talking about the building itself?
Let's say you're in a neighborhood where you have maybe two or three of these set-aside lots. The neighborhood's growing. It was built on a certain standard back in day one. Now come year 10, the owner wants to subdivide at a property. That's going to be the potential there that the home could be totally out of character with the neighborhood it's going into. Mm-hmm. Will there be their protections to prevent that?
Well, any homes done through the subdivision process, any homes or any developments that are more than four units, require conformance to the city's design standards. So that's going to make sure that you've got a porch on the front, minimum eaves, certain things like that to maintain a good appearance for the home.
You're talking about the original building.
What I'm seeing going in my own neighborhood in Newport Hills, just typical booming subdivision. What I'm seeing now is that people are going in there buying two lots, tearing down, building a mega mansion right in the middle of these little 1,200 square foot homes. I think that's a disaster waiting to happen.
I should be good example. This is Santa Barbara. If you've seen what's happened down there, you have homes that were 50s, 60s, some 70s construction, typically single story ranch or bungalow type construction. And then someone comes in there and buys a lot, and part of it though is they're allowing them to build almost half the lot line. We have
setbacks.
Exactly. So we've addressed some of that issue. But I guess I actually also have kind of a flip side of that, is bringing in one of the things that makes North Bend kind of North Bend is the fact that we have so many different styles, occasionally very close together. And while it may not be the most visually appealing, it's part of the charm of the town. So
it's almost, in my mind, it's almost a finger in the eye. Mm-hmm. You get a mega mansion, literally a mega mansion, by 6,000 square feet, amongst homes that are 1,200 square feet, mm-hmm. two-story, stucco, and everyone else is wood siding. It just is, just tears apart the neighborhood. I want to just comment that this has the potential. Unless we have something in writing that goes with the land, that the land be developed, it will be in keeping with the neighborhood that surrounds it.
So what you're talking about are design standards.
Yeah.
And that would be a separate topic than what we've got tonight. We're talking about bulk and dimensional standards, the setbacks, the height limits, etc. It would still, homes constructed within this new zone would still be subject to the same bulk and dimensional standards as they would in the conventional low density residential zone. So in that context, they would be within the same character.
When I'm saying that, I'm saying that the whole idea about leaving a lot vacant invites, just what I'm talking about, we need to do something to make sure it doesn't happen. Otherwise, I'd be voting against the zone.
So,
if I could just ask a clarifying question so I'm on the same page. If I remember correctly, this area was primarily in the floodway, floodplain,
yeah.
Out in Maloney Grove area.
Yeah.
Right? So mm-hmm. those areas where we wanted to prevent the same concentration with the new standards that we had for the LDR because it was a floodway.
Right.
Floodplain. Those are the only areas that we have zoned this currently. And I get that what we're talking about is going to apply in the future to new areas that might be.
The council's looking at that.
Okay. But that zoning will go through us first, correct? That new zoning plan?
That does not need to go back to the Planning Commission.
No, so
the Planning Commission made their recommendation, and now the council has the authority to make changes to the Planning Commission's recommendation prior to adoption.
So, Elizabeth?
You saw me looking around the room. I was trying to find the map because my recollection is that, in fact, yes, it's everywhere's a floodplain, but it was in fact floodway.
Right.
A good portion of the area we initially targeted, but it's been expanded by the council
That's
to
right.
encompass areas that are just special for hazard area. So they're not necessarily, they don't have the constraints in construction that we were talking about when we were initially discussing this. One of my concerns about this is that we could end up in a situation, I don't know if anyone has been out to, Twin Falls, the houses right there before you hit this beautiful spot that are right on top of each other. The way they did that, and that King County requirement is the lots go down a canyon behind them. So the actual usable space on those lots is really quite small. I mean, I comparable to what we have out in Maloney's Grove, because most of it is, having nearly gone out there to do photos and nearly fallen down that hill, I remember it quite well. But my concern with these changes and using the same standards that we do for the LDR4 is, would we be setting up a similar issue where you have property that's primarily in the floodway and they have enough space that's not floodway to use those to put them right on top of each other? So we essentially have a similar look to that, admittedly with a bit more space. So I'm not sure that it necessarily takes care of the look, maintaining the look. Yes, it would be efficient use of the space by putting it in that area that's buildable. But it kind of goes against what the intent was, I think, and where the council seems to be heading with it, which is having an area of lower density, particularly going by 90.
So the density is still going to be no more than 2 per acre.
Okay.
So that's not going to change. So you can't do, you can't stack them in there.
Okay.
You could potentially put 2 houses within 15 feet of each other with the side setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you'll have to consider with the pros and cons of. But beside or beyond that, they're still not going to be able to put more houses in. The lot sizes are larger because of more than half acre lots.
So I look at it from a clarity point of view, and I, along with Elizabeth, kind of took it as that we created a zone that was for a specific use, and putting it with low density residential just kind of muddies that of how it should be applied or how it was separate from them. And so if we create a new zone that's just about density, it still should be, in my mind, something of its own zone and not combined. I hear what you're saying, and I'm not sure where in the code we could put just constrained residential that, yes, there's two homes per acre, but they could still be close together, you know, because you're protecting wetlands or you know, more flood-prone areas. I think we could accomplish it in the same way, but still, when you look at the definition of what I thought we passed as constrained residential, I don't know if it changed. I don't believe it had. It read very different than low density.
Well, the only thing that's been established so far was that you wanted to see a zone for lower density, and that's what this is. Now, what that looks like in terms of setbacks and height limits, that's going to be up to you guys to make a recommendation to the council. So if you want us to go back, this is just introduction tonight, so if you want us to go back and create larger setbacks separate from those of the LDR zone, we can do that.
So I actually kind of get the efficiency of trying to put it in the same place. Would we be able to reference with it without making a change from the general gist of where you're going and putting it in with the low density residential, but indicate those different setbacks within this? Would that be something that would be
that's not a problem.
Easily done?
That's not a problem. We can, within that same table, just create two separate columns instead of one column. Mm-hmm.
I kind of get where they were going with this. It's actually because it is really about how many homes you can put per acre. It's still residential, and it's intended to be single-family residential, so it logically makes sense to me to have it in one place for people to look. But I also agree that we need to be a little bit more explicit so people understand what the intent is in there, and the fact that it's an acknowledgement that these are properties that are already limited in many ways in what can be built because of things that have nothing to do with what we're doing, but everything to do with
the location.
The fact that they flood them off of, or if you're looking at
So this approach that we would recommend just provides that maximum flexibility. So it allows you to have the same setbacks as the LDR zone if there are other site constraints. So if there's a wetland, if there's a floodway, like you said. But it doesn't mean that you're going to get more houses out of it in the same zone.
Like, I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. I thought I was interpreting this to read that the CLDR will allow a lot to be undeveloped when the rest of the neighborhood is being developed, but it didn't have to be. That the sensitive lot that's half an acre in size, but actually has a quarter acre of building space, that there would be lots allowed to be left undeveloped.
No, that's incorrect. So I think what I was explaining was, I'll draw it on the board to make it a little easier. Let's see. Draw it here. So right now, say you got 10 acres and you want to do a subdivision, so you're going to be able to get no more than 5 lots out of that. So what you could do is you could do, here's your street, you could do 1, 2, 3, and like Elizabeth was saying, you could do really long lots, or you could break it up so that you've got just a couple small lots next to each other, and then maybe a couple of large lots. But then the overall average cannot be greater than half-acre lot sizes.
And that's what this allows now, right?
What's that?
That's LDR now, right?
No. Now, LDR now means that you can do double that number of homes. You can do up to 4 units per acre.
Okay, so half the density.
Yeah.
Constrained.
Yeah. So that's a good distinction. So constrained actually means 50%. Mm-hmm.
It also refers to the fact that there's existing other laws that limit.
I think that's a good compromise. So see it now, it does keep the land from being over the stack because you're trying to ditch your 40 in there because you're allowed it on the current zoning. Mm-hmm. It allows the land to speak for itself that I can't take 40 houses, I've got certain constraints here. So that's going to allow a lighter zoning because of the impacts that the land presents.
Mm-hmm. But you can still cluster that way.
Yeah.
Cluster. And that would enable, should some future city decide that we want to densify the area, the homes are already kind of in a more sensible, a clustered arrangement, or they could be in a more clustered arrangement so that you could do further subdivision in the future if the zoning were to change. But until that change were to occur, you wouldn't be able to do any more.
If the Snoqualmie River completely dried up.
You just hadn't said that. I was on board. That's not right.
That's not going to happen unless the city were to decide that they wanted that to happen. Otherwise,
city,
it's just going
to
be
that. The city cannot be allowed to do that after the fact. The land.
No, the public.
I know, but the public. The property is already on record for being constrained. That's a legal entitlement on the property. You can't just come back and say, well, all you have is a free, and well, the rest of you decided that it's okay to do that.
We could create another zone.
Yeah, but if the river moves or something shifts that makes it now more buildable and the constraints go away, the natural constraints go away or something like that.
Then and I'd even throw out this, which technically is it works, if the Corps of Engineers figure out what they're going to do with the dike and levee system. We may well have some changes in what we now call floodway or flood zone. I know, not federally, not from the FEMA folks, but
no.
The reality of things.
Well, no. Yeah, not going to happen.
Really?
We'd have to build a dam.
I'm not a big supporter of coming back to the neighborhood because you can change the law. The neighbor's established.
I'm sorry. I think that was too much of a sidetrack. What you guys are focused on is what is going to be the Boca Convention standards for this zone. So don't think about it could change in the future. We're just creating for what's right now.
All right, David, all we have on the field.
I have a question, a clarification on it. So in the LDR, we're kind of looking to merge the two or in certain areas, or at least in certain aspects. In the LDR, you can have 15% of the homes cottage, mm-hmm. right? So this would potentially turn that 2 DU per acre into an available space for cottage owners and therefore 10 per acre.
No, you still have to be subject to the no more than half acre lot size.
So you could do a cottage, but it would still be.
It's 112.
Yeah, it's just essentially a really small house.
Okay. So, alright. Just making sure that's not going to apply.
Speaking of density, under A.1, for LDR, you talk about a density of 4 dwelling units, and I thought it was more like 3.
The maximum is 4 per acre. So there may be certain circumstances because of their layout of their roads, the way they handle their stormwater infrastructure, et cetera, that they could get 4. So yeah, this is just an introduction tonight. We'll be setting a public hearing for this on the 22nd of October. And,
one more question. I don't know if it's possible to find out for manufactured homes, which has a permitted under table 1810.030, permitted in conditional land uses, if it's going to be in the plain, you know, are they going to be sited with the same, I guess, foundational
yes.
elevations and standards?
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. Are aren't there additional tie-down requirements as well for people who are floating away? Or are they, mainly put them in, or they're putting them on actual foundations nowadays?
If it's in the floodplain, it has to be elevated just like any other residential structure. And then foundation can go to the building just like any operating structure as well.
How does that fit with our design standards? Because it doesn't have to look like part of the building, so they'll have to pay somebody to come in and build siding.
Yeah, it would still be subject if it's in a subdivision. So again, it's more than four dwellings in the development, then it's subject to the design standards.
Otherwise, we'll have lights.
No, most of them. I've seen a lot of them, and most. If you think of a lot of the houses in San Juan now, where it's got siding that looks just like the siding on the house that goes down, most are doing something similar to that.
Are they manufactured or something?
No, with manufactured homes. I've seen it, and it can be done quite nicely. And that actually may be something that we want to talk about in terms of requirements, if that's what we're hurry to discuss that. Because it's possible to say, hey, we don't want to have up on stilts with lattice around it.
Yeah. Or just cement blocks.
Most of them lately are going on to, like, they put a foundation down and there's toning walls, and then it's on top of it. From the road, a lot of the new ones, you can't tell the difference from a stick built house when it's done correctly.
So, Mike, is that performance standards?
That could be performance standards, yeah. So one thing that we could do is, one of our goals, again, is to complete the required update process to our comprehensive plan and development regulations, and that we're overdue. That was supposed to be June. So we want to wrap this up. This is kind of a required part of that since we created a new zone.
Yeah.
But for other things, like if we want to go back and create performance standards or deal with other issues that you kind of see along the way, we want to create a list and then come back to those later in the year or next year.
I just have one other question. On 18.10.040 bulletin dimensional standards, under cottages, C, it says CPND. Can you tell me what?
18.10.040.
Yeah, page 3 of 9. The bulletin dimensional standards.
Under cottages. So that a cottage in the LDR zone is only allowed through what's called the planned neighborhood district process, and that establishes some different standards that allow clustering in a sense. So you can do cottages within the LDR zone by placing some of them on a corner of the lot. Or a corner of the property at the cottage size lots, but then they're still subject to the overall density requirement of 4 per acre.
I guess
you can't exceed that.
So does that refer to the 1812.010 plan neighborhood district?
Yeah.
So can we instead say CPND, see that section?
CPND section?
Yeah, see that 1812.010.
If that's what that way.
Yeah. I don't know where to find.
Okay, yeah.
Or chapter 18.12.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's just a little more direction.
Consensus from the Planning Commission then to keep the bulk and dimensional standard the same as the LDR, except for the lots, the lots density requirement.
Okay. Not hearing anybody disagree.
Okay. So this will come back to you on the 22nd then.
Are you looking for a motion, Mike, that helps you do that? Or?
No, we don't need a motion at this point. Okay. Since it'll be coming back to you.
Hey, think one last thing I was noticing. Oh, no, I got it. I'm good. It's an and that goes from point one to point two.
If I could get on my soapbox for half a second before we leave this topic.
I didn't miss it.
So I'll try to make this brief. I just want to reiterate that I don't think our job is to restrict the use of private people money beyond what's already done. So every time we go down that road, because we're doing good, I just want to bring that up. Think about what we're doing and if it affects the individual property owner whose rules we're changing. Maybe without them knowing. Possible. Because they don't read the paper, or they didn't see the notice, or they didn't show up to our meetings. It's a major impact to somebody's property. Thank you.
So, with that, let's move on to item number 5, the Parks Element introduction. Long awaited and very welcome.
Yeah.
Mike, so, would you like to
Yeah, just to reiterate, we've got a number of materials on your desk that weren't in your packet. So that is the recommendation from the Parks Commission with red line edits. And the majority of those are going to be just very simple grammatical edits. I want to make sure that you have that. Also, the Parks Element maps are not in your packet, so we provided those. And then I also provided the 2015 Parks Survey. And the Parks Commission used that survey quite a bit in determining what types of projects they wanted to put onto both the 20-year list and the 6-year capital improvements plan. So the overall intent of updating the element, first of all, just part of the required process to make sure that we're consistent with the Growth Management Act requirements. But otherwise, to update a lot of outdated information, and particularly the population projection. So the Planning Commission updated the land use element with new population projections, and we needed to carry that forward through the Parks Element as well. The Parks Element has park level of service standards that establish how many baseball fields, how many soccer fields, et cetera, we should have per certain levels of population. And when we updated the population projection, that carries forward through those level service standards to determine how many and when we need those park features. So that's been updated. The document's been dramatically simplified. The old document was very, very lengthy, had a lot of descriptive text in it, and so wherever possible, we reduced the amount of description and just tried to make it more concise. In certain cases, just referencing out to a website that has more information rather than trying to regurgitate a bunch of information writing the document itself.
Who do we have to thank for that?
The Parks Commission and just through the process.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Yeah. Mike, we didn't have this last night, and we didn't get this updated, but there's, when we go looking at this, if this wouldn't be for the parks, there's some stuff on here that's just old information.
Oh,
so
okay.
We just need to, our Visitor and Convention Bureau is no longer at the train depot, and
Yeah.
So we just, a few, couple of things on there.
Yeah.
Is this online in the same format?
It is.
And all the bubbles outside of it?
What's that?
All the bubble info bubbles around
it? Yeah.
That's great. I've never seen it before. It's awesome. I'm like studying. Oh, really? That's cool. Very good.
The level of service standards for parks, the Parks Commission left alone except for the multiple recreation court. It was previously 1 per 6,000 population, and they recommended bumping that up to 1 per 4,000 population. And that was, this, I'm sorry, page 15 is the park and recreation level service standards. And that's based on their review of the survey information that we received from the public. So the Parks Commission evaluated the SciView 2012 recreation survey. They conducted a survey throughout the park district of recreation preferences of district residents. So that provided information as to what was valuable throughout the district. And remember, North Bend is within the district, so we feel that's applicable to North Bend. And then to also get our own information, we conducted a survey in June and July of this year and received responses from the public. And the responses from both of those, the Parks Commission considered in both the level of service standards, are we at appropriate levels based on what we hear from the citizens? And then also, are we providing the right types of projects planned based on what we're hearing from the public in terms of need and desire? So in the park recreation level service standards, the Parks Commission, the amendment that they made was to multiple recreation courts, which is a court that could have a high net for volleyball or a low net for tennis. The survey said that we don't really have enough of that now. And comparing what we have now against our levels of service standards was the way to kind of determine, do we need to bump up our standard to get more of those. So we did that with multiple recreation courts. The rest of them were pretty consistent with what people said they need versus don't need. So baseball field, people generally said, yeah, we got enough, in comparing against what our standards call for versus what we have was the way to gauge if we're in the right spot or not.
Is there any way the survey or maybe just interpretive could have said, you know, if somebody wants to have a tennis court and a volleyball court combined, but also everybody wants a new football stadium, the financial difference is dramatic.
It is, yeah.
How does that get filtered in the survey that people want?
Our survey didn't get that to that level of detail. We were just looking at what are the primary need facilities. And then when the Parks Commission was kind of balancing those things against one another, they did take into account bang for your buck. So that was one of the key questions that they did consider, is one of the things that's on our park 20-year plan is to upgrade the ball fields at Torrington Park to a sand-based.
So I appreciate that this was survey was done inside the community, but when it comes to these recreational parks, there's a lot of interuse between other communities that come. They come here because there's no other space available in their town. Am I right about that? There's a little league, all that. Our parks are leased out to whoever wants to use them in the available space. So how do you incorporate the needs from outside our community to use our parks for recreational use?
Well, we just acknowledge that we do have a broader service area than just our city limits. We're funding improvements for our residents, but we are going to have a higher level of use than what our residents.
Well, okay. I look at the Preston Field. The soccer field, that's all outside use. It has to be the best soccer field in the area. It's used by everybody but Preston Heights. There's not that many people in that town. So they're marketing their soccer field as we must be doing. Certainly we have contracts available for people to come into the area to use our parks for these tournament use and for these scheduled uses.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't just using those parks ourselves, so how do we accommodate that with our survey? We know that people are out there coming into us looking for our use.
Well, our survey wasn't just limited to North Bend residents. One of the things we asked is, are you a North Bend resident, to gauge where that information is coming from? But I think it was about 70% of the people in the survey said that they were North Bend residents. And then also from the broader Sideview Park District, we used that information as well to gauge what is the relative demand. So that's a much broader area. That's the fire district service area as well. So it extends, kind of wraps around Snoqualmie. Goes, I don't remember how far it is. It goes up towards the pass. Do you know what the boundaries are?
I can't remember the boundaries.
Okay.
It's pretty broad.
Yeah.
All the way down to Meadowbrook. Of course, then it gets a little bit different because we manage different facilities that other people own. Mm-hmm. Right? So we extend throughout the valley.
Yeah.
And that's
so looking at that data, I think, gives us a sense of the broader communities.
We don't attract people outside our district.
Well, I think we do, but I think it's usually the Little League will host a tournament, the soccer people will host a tournament, so they, if they need more, when we did this for the soccer fields, I know some of the soccer people had input on we added another field at Torgerson in the back where the blackberry bushes, that got another field, they were happy with that so that they could do tournaments. But as far as, comparable to the Preston facility, wouldn't we love it? You know, that is, I think it's a fabulous facility that King County built. But I don't know that the Soccer Association would have to, we'll have a match here at Torgerson, and then maybe we can move it on if there's on one down at Centennial Fields, they turn that into soccer. So that would be something I think we'd have to do jointly.
So, Judy, did we actually ask the various teams?
No.
If they want, they need space more than that. We provided if they would sign a use contract.
Or did they? Well, we do have contracts or use agreements with the Little League and the Soccer Association right now. Those are our two primary users at Torkson Park. I believe they do have priority over other uses. But from what I understand, we are pretty scheduled out with the fields.
But that suggests we need to have more fields.
It does. But that's also put into comparison against what are other demands within the community. And that's where the Parks Commission really had to consider a lot of this data of, you know, are we funding our trails? Are we funding our splash parks? A lot of different things that the community has said that they want. The Parks Commission needs to prioritize those, and that's where the cost comes in.
Right.
So that example of the improvements to Torkson Park ball fields, that's $2 million something to do that. So is that a better use of our funds than doing a bunch of other improvements that the community also said that they desire? And it's a little bit of a guessing game, but you have to compare against the information that they had available through that survey. That's the city survey and the side view survey is the best source of information that we have.
Frisbee golf come up.
Yes, mm-hmm. It did. Yes, it did.
A lot of bang for the buck.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we decided that up by Meadowbrook would be kind of a passive area out there, and I've never played it, but those that have played said the trees and stuff out there would be something they could use, so that was a thought we could put out there, and that did come up in the survey, so you're right on target there.
And the other thought I had on the fields, because I was surprised too, Dick, that if you're talking about really young players like 6, 7, 8, and younger,
yeah.
They're going to play in the grass, they'll be doing their thing. But the minute they get into middle school and later age, high school for sure, they're looking for turf and lights before they commit.
And those turn out to be a lot of traveling teams and clubs,
yeah,
certainly in the soccer venues. So, you almost need a designated spot that they have those.
This is an obvious way to take advantage of our natural surroundings, is that people love to come out here and play. But our survey was principally confined to our community rather than going out and getting input from people near us but outside of our district to see if they had an interest in coming this way.
Well, it'd be hard to target those people in the survey because we'd have to go find, you know, all these different communities and say, hey, do you travel up to North Bend? Are you a part of this? And I do understand going from the association level to the bigger organization and say, hey, we recognize that you come to North Bend, or hey, you don't, we see that you go Carnation Duval, is there anything that we could do to entice it? That could be another stage of this. I mean, frankly, the step one, needs and desires of the community, right? And where I love where you're going is more of a marketing outreach, which is definitely what we need, because we've got all these great things happening in Meadowbrook, like the Civil War thing, the Reggae Fest, a lot of cool stuff is coming out here.
Reggae?
And so, yeah, right. But my point being is that I think where you're going, which I totally love and support, is getting a more broader marketing campaign that would then help us use our natural resources to really entice those people on a bigger level as opposed to just our community parks.
Yeah, probably be an EDC.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, too, is that when we're trying to figure out, okay, do we dump $2 million in baseball fields? Now, I know we could work with associations to offset some of that cost because they use those, so we could get some contributions there. But we have, and that's what's great about SMAT, we have so many parks within the area that if we sprinkle little goodness all over the place, then we can spread the wealth, so to speak. But
we try to sprinkle a little goodness.
I was like, wow, this is fantastic.
It's a new tagline.
And so, and what's interesting, too, on that is that one of the things that I didn't see in here that I'm just putting out there for consideration was there was something in there about working with the tribe to preserve historic areas, but I'm thinking about existing districts and existing associations, which goes in the spirit of what you thought. For example, Sideview Parks, right? Sideview Parks is managing Meadowbrook Farms. There's discussions about Torgerson. There's all sorts of things like that, but I didn't see in here, correct me if I'm wrong, about reaching out to other associations, other districts that could really help us offset costs or management and alleviate that burden from our essentially our economic design.
So are you saying for the same thing, reach out to the soccer association and that for
I'm
more?
Say, yeah, because it, to me, it's one of those things that if we set it up as a goal, then we should have that active dialogue with the existing districts, the existing associations, to really help foster a great relationship where it's a system of reciprocity. Yeah. Right? Yeah. We work with them, they work with us, but I didn't see that called out. And maybe this isn't the appropriate document?
No, there could be a policy in here that describes the desire to expand cooperation. And
maybe a goal. I don't know about a policy, but a goal. It could be a goal.
It could be a goal.
Yeah, I think a goal.
I mean, that's the way I was thinking of it, just so that it's top of mind for the Parks Commission as they plot the future.
It'd probably be nice to meet with them every year, at least with those associations, to see if there's where we could. I know they've talked about lighting, and lighting is great, but you know, we have to find the right venue to light to have the lighting. You can't just light up Torgerson Park because.
And I like where you're going, because another extension of that is looking at local businesses. Because, I mean, you go to Torgerson, you see all the sponsorships there.
Right.
If we were to reach out to local businesses or even beyond, right? So let's say there's an electrician that's in Falls City that comes up here for soccer.
Right.
You know, give them some namespace somewhere in the park. We can start offsetting costs and start really planning on that. That could be a good cooperative movement.
I think they have talked before. I went to a meeting at Parks Department probably 8 years ago, and they were the soccer association was there, and they were they wanted that field, that blackberry patch at Torgerson, and it was the why not?
Right.
So they kind of got together, and they put a lot of money into it, and did a lot of the work. We had some money, and I wasn't on the commission, but.
That's great if we start creating those relationships and we need to go out for bond money, so we can go out as a collective front.
I don't know if you're going to get bond money if we're paying for paying for side view. I don't know if you can go twice.
I'm saying down the road, right? Yeah. When we try to reach the 15,000 population in 20 years.
Oh, right. A little different then.
It's going to be a little bit different. All the other existing bonds, we have a couple here from North Bend already, all have been paid off. So it's just something to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me come up with some policy language about that.
That'd be great.
And the only other thought was when we're talking about Tollgate, I didn't see the new language in there about the playground structures and the new stuff. Was that there in the stat?
Should be in there.
Was it in there? Maybe
the descriptions?
Maybe I glanced over it.
Facilities?
It could be.
Getting a rubberized surface.
So are you talking about just what's there now? The
description
of that?
Oh, the
that
new
was
one?
That was the ILA that North Bend did with site view. Spruce up that back in. Maybe I just missed it.
No, thank you. Oh, I thought for sure we had that in there. How did we not?
I think the interpretive center is on the Meadowbrook, if I recall it.
Yeah, we've got it on page 6. In the clean version.
Oh, phew.
So that's the kind of middle of the page. Tollgate Farm Park within the broader Tollgate Farm property. And then it talks about the park containing restrooms, a playground, picnic tables, and a loop trail.
Cool. No, I'm just glad it's there. I mean, when I was reading through it.
Was that this year?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, oh, that's the inventory.
You could add a date in there since you have other dates in there. I think it's accomplished.
This document, the miles of the revision, or is this document being presented for edits or revisions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were.
I didn't think we were going to do our page by page.
You can start on that tonight. We're going to come back to a public hearing on the 22nd, but we assume that this meeting, your next meeting, and the 22nd would be for your revisions and review.
Oh, this isn't one and done. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, the Parks Commission's done.
Yeah, they've provided their recommendation.
Right.
Now it comes to you with their recommendation.
Redo it necessarily.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was thinking this was an introduction and.
Yeah, it's still subject to your review and edit.
But if we don't do our page by page like we normally do, we would have another meeting to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't go through it thoroughly, because my understanding, was that we just needed the introduction, we'll have a new copy, I wasn't sure what the edits would be. Because there were some more pertinent ones.
What's the relationship of the Parks Commission towards the tribe?
There's no tribe.
Formal relationship. There's no relationship.
Okay. This shows up in this document. And there's probably one mention here about working with the tribe to identify historic tribal properties. And I think this whole valley was once occupied by both the Muckleshoots and the Smoke Wallabies at various times. I know they are a very difficult culture to cultivate. It takes years. You can't just walk in their office and sit down and start talking. They won't talk to you that way. But I just know that they need to be pulled into this kind of plan to be given a chance to talk about how to start talking. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I went to a session on this just about a month ago with KCD. It's amazing what I thought I knew and I don't know nothing. I could get them in the first base, but I wasn't approaching them to talk away. And so I would urge the Parks Commission to develop a relationship with the tribe. So as you're developing, particularly the areas of Meadowbrook and Tollgate.
We do have a good relationship with the tribe at Meadowbrook Farm. So both the city, both North Bend and Snoqualmie, as well as the tribe, are regular members of the Meadowbrook Farm Preservation Association. So we have a lot of dialogue about future development of Meadowbrook Farm with the tribe. It would be good to extend that to relationship directly with the city as well, if there's mutual
agreement. There can be some interesting signposts along the way that talks about prior occupation by the tribe. To add to that interpretive sense of Meadowbrook and Tollgate, I think they're just missing. We know they occupied the sites years, centuries ago. Mm-hmm. It's just that the Tocqueville turnaround is an example of non-communication happening right there. And I just think that we need to really be talking to them clearly and seriously, not just giving them time. Because we have a lot that we can talk about with the tribes being out here. Just like the rivers are an obvious feature, some kind of tribe's history in the area would be considered to be very valuable.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Ryan. So I just want to know, does anybody have anything specific that they want to cover in the document?
Yes. That was the overarching one.
Yeah. I just...
That was paragraph 17C, subset R32, right?
Okay. I'd like to start with the picture, since that's the first thing there. That's a beautiful picture of what E.J. Roberts looked like probably 20 years ago. Unfortunately, the disrepair and...
it's a metal slide.
And that slide is still as shiny as it was that bridge is not.
The bridge is just about to be replaced.
I did see that, and that was reassuring. However, it's not what it looks like now. Maybe it would make a little bit more sense to have Tollgate Farm Park. It's a recent improvement, and it's certainly something to be touted and celebrated, whereas, unfortunately, E.J. Roberts is not at this current moment.
You know what would be great about that is if people were in the shop.
The
park is being used.
Very true.
I saw a mention of the Elk Herd in Norbrook. And that's an amazing herd that sits out there and lets us watch it. But we really need to be proactive in developing spaces for people to pull off the road safely. I'll take advantage of that feature because there's nothing there. I think you mentioned it. I'm not quite sure where the placement of that viewing site is that you have in mind.
Isn't there a couple of turnoffs?
There are, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got that in the 20-year improvements plan.
And I'm not sure exactly where that location is.
It's near the swing rock. You know the swing rock is?
Yeah. The one that was supposed to be preserving.
Mm-hmm. Almost gone.
Is on the south side of the road, or is that on the north side of the road? Are you getting close to the herd? Do you get a good view?
It's on the south side of the road. So the south side is in North Bend. The north side in that location, the border is right there, but the pullout ability on the north side of the road would be in Snoqualmie.
pretty sure you can get state money to build that. It's a state road. Mm-hmm. As being used for public purpose, I'm sure you can get a high amount of dollars from the state to build that, whatever you do.
There's something called a watchable wildlife thing.
Yeah, Snoqualmie actually did try to go after those funds to do a pullout. They weren't successful. I don't know the reasons. That's certainly something that we would go after these projects.
Is there any truth to putting something in that it's supposedly the largest herd or gathering of elk in Washington State?
I haven't heard that before.
But there is one there, but it's not where everybody knows about. It's on the golf course side. It was a beautiful pullout, but the herd occupies the highway 2 end of it. Mm-hmm. So I found myself walking towards the herd, realized how dangerous it could be.
Yeah.
But even our tourists that go through between Snoqualmie and North Bend don't know where that pullout is. They never know it. Mm-hmm. They didn't.
Signage. I think that we could actually, just some signage would increase safety in that area to get them to come around to the other side. I drive that road every day on my way home, and I have come upon more than one person who's gotten out of their car, they've left it just parked in the lane to walk across 202 in the middle of probably busy traffic time, 5-7, and they're walking toward these huge animals with absolutely no clue, with the camera stuck in their face or phone stuck out. And if they did it at the wrong time of the year, it's a matter of time and statistics.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is.
Buggy out.
Okay.
I have a curriculum. I got to at least catch a couple teachers. My
straight A's disagree.
All right. Thank you.
But that is a major feature that is not being served in terms of its visibility.
Mm-hmm. But signage would be an intermediate step to direct people to safe.
On the other side of that same herd is the issue of things like the battle, the creation of the battle. So if anything's going to move that herd out, there's going to be things like that. I wouldn't expect we're to have an awful lot of that go on, because that kind of activities. It's not going to make that herd stay around.
You're talking about the Civil War reenactment?
Yeah. That's to push a herd away. That would drag out of anyone. If they know that's going to become a continued use, they'll adapt to it, not be there. So be very sensitive to that. It's kind of cool to have the recreation going on, but maybe not on that side of the field. Maybe on the tollgate side. Would you have their cattle, they don't have the elk over there.
Well, all of the area within Meadowbrook Farm would be managed by the Meadowbrook Farm Preservation Association. So this group doesn't play as much of a role in, or the Parks Commission and even the larger city. We sit on the board of the Meadowbrook Farm Preservation Association, but it's that group that's tasked with managing Meadowbrook Farm. So they're going to consider the types of uses. And
it's in our plans, so we must have some control.
We have control on that. We sit on the board.
So you have influence.
We have influence, but
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Influence yourself. In my view, as a forester or land manager, you're going to fragment the herd if that activity becomes common. They'll adjust to it. They always have. They always will. If there's something that's interfering with their normal pattern, they will adjust and move. And it doesn't seem like we need to be on the Middlebrook side of that.
Thousand-acre
property. We should be sitting on the Middlebrook side doing that.
They're trying to also balance a number of different competing objectives. So they're also looking at ways to increase use of Middlebrook Farm, let the public use it, bring in events and activities that will generate revenue for their operation as well.
I know, but they need to be funded by some other source. It's funding for them, so they're trying to use the property, but it's being used outside of the terms of the agreement that was bought for. It's doing exactly what we're doing, preserving the property for natural purposes. I'm tempted to want to have a lot of weddings out there. I mean, it's a natural thing, having rock concerts out there. But when I see that herd, that's my guiding principle. I want the herd to stay there.
So you thinking that we need some language in this document then that kind of puts a policy in place for that?
I think we should temper our uses. That would cause a herd to adjust. A good conversation with the herd management team that understands that herd.
That's interesting because one of the objectives in the Supported Wildlife Management Group is to get the elk out of the valley.
There's a lot of concern about the human elk interaction.
Yeah.
There's concern about safety, the increased vehicular incidents that aren't only causing property damage to the vehicles that are killing a number of elk. We actually have far better numbers now that they're actively seeking them without having them to kill on A90. And as you're talking about that, I love the herd too, but one of their stated objectives is to try and move them out of that area and to get them back up into the woods. For that reason, they've been going in and clearing areas and planting grasses to try and encourage them to shift out of areas where we have this constant
human global warming will thwart that effort. Because they remember where the water is, the water's all downhill now.
Very possible, but I think that they're, and it may be where it's worth having them explain the thinking behind it, as to why they want to discourage the herd from parking themselves there.
When I was in the forestry business, we were thrilled that the elk were basically annihilated by the farmers turn of the century. That elk herd used to predominate Carnation and North. What you wouldn't find Roosevelt elk anywhere west of the crest line for decades. They were just
there.
They were harvested out of the area, and that's good for tree farming because they really do a lot of damage to young plantations. So I'm putting on another hat now. I'm saying the elk seem to be a very high on the recreational element in this plan. Certainly it's one of the most amazing elements. And now we're talking about finding ways to get rid of them. And one of the certain ways is to use that land in a way that they will not like and they will just adjust. And we won't worry about getting them out of it. It was on their own.
Mm-hmm. You spend a lot of time in the Central Meadow when there's activity.
Yeah.
I know we have along Highway 20, and on the way to Concrete, there's a 27 VFW filming and manage a little pull out. So it could fit a lot more cars than what we have, like three or something like that. And I think it's some sort of fence you can't climb over. I've never seen anyone out in that field.
And that
I don't see many people stopping either. But if you go there early morning hours, I've seen a lot more out here. Field can have hundreds sometimes.
We have a newly installed trail that's right along parallel to the road that invites people to get out there.
Mm-hmm. And that concerns me. I've actually recently seen people who were walking along that trail in a very clearly comfortable spot and came upon all the elk. And they're, in the middle of nowhere, 20, 30 feet away from elk that are moving around.
And they're running right now.
Exactly.
They got a Google.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. In fact, they were completely taken aback. So I'm not sure if they were visiting or were completely unaware of the potential, but I'm sure it was a beautiful sight to be so close up to them and a little bit awe-inspiring, but again, I get concerned about the safety, and I see repeated incidents in there.
That's why we need signs out there. We need tons of signs of safe place to park.
And there are some information signs that have been posted. I don't know if it was by Meadowbrook or by the Elk Management Group. Yes. As far as a pullout, exactly, for a 45, 50 mile an hour road, there's a certain amount of length that you have to have, angled spaces, if you pull off from either side. I don't necessarily think a fence is necessary, but I think information is. And I think I kind of agree with Dick that it's something that we should be thankful for as a valued asset to our community versus, I understand the picture as wolves are introduced into Washington State and one was killed not too far in I-90 from our city, that having wolves and elk running through downtown North Bend is a different aspect of our city than maybe denser one
than...
Now we're talking rural.
Yeah.
You want rural? We got it.
Well, they walk all around Jackson Hole.
There we go.
They're reviving Tweez, the movie, the whole thing.
They are. Having said that, that we have a central gathering spot for them versus dispersed among the city is almost a better design. There's certainly a few varied herds that wander around the city that the health management group knows, and they go away when construction happens, and then they come back once all the new trees are planted.
They have a habit. I live on the Middle Fork like you do, and that large group comes together during certain times of the year, and then they fragment out. They have their own corridors. They go back and retrace, and then they come back, and it seems to be very fungible. And that's a wonderful thing to understand that goes on there. It's not by accident. It's all habitual. And I don't want to see that disturbed. If it's functioning, I understand the number game.
Part of it is, fortunately, with the season of the rut, it also corresponds with when the event season ends, because member farm can't handle events on the fields during the rainy season because of rutting of the soil, the tire tracks and things. They try to keep events off after roughly the beginning of September.
But you could do dog agility and things like that.
Yeah, those are smaller scale.
Drone training. Mm-hmm. Just kidding.
No. My nephew is learning to fly his drone out there because he can't damage anything.
That's right.
Of course, he's obsessed about landing properly, so he never takes it up very high.
There's an element in the plan, in terms of the overall plan, it's a very, very small thing. Just to get, I think, to get the most attention. People like Jim will read this and come right out of the chairs. It talks about cajoling, that is, we're taking the land from the owners on those dikes along the river.
What page are you on?
We talked about last night.
Common use. Areas on private lands is the heading right on the top. And it talks about areas that the board talks about how land can be taken if they aren't. If they lose their informal use, there's ways to take ownership of it. I think that's just wrong. It's such a small part of the plan. I wish you guys would just forget about it.
We talked about it last night, remember? The dike area, that thing?
We're trying to formalize the use of that trail into a public use when it's on private land to begin with. And there's actual language in here that talks about how the land can be used without paying the owner for it, if the owner disagrees with the use. And I think most owners there are probably grandfathered in. You probably can't take the land from them unless you do pay for it. Those dikes were built in the 60s, and the laws you're talking about weren't enacted until later on in the 90s. So I think you're pretty well grandfathered. You're going to get people like Jim coming to meetings talking about taking private land for public use.
Well, there's no intention of taking it. And I think this is just recognizing that in some circumstances, like out by Riverfront Park, there's not actually a formal park there, but it is public property. But to get onto where most of the people like to use the beach, they're crossing the vets' property. Yeah. And the vets have been fine with that. They have not fenced it. They haven't put up no trespassing signs. So this is just acknowledging that there are certain...
But further the document, Mike, further the document is a paragraph that tells you how you can get access publicly without paying for it. Paying for it is a preferable option. But the landlord doesn't want it. If there's a new landlord, then he puts up a fence, crosses that trail, there'll be public pressure to reopen that thing. And he won't be able to stand there and say you can't do it, and then he'll say we're going to condemn you.
I don't read the same thing, Dick, because I'm looking at it. It said dikes offer long-term river access and trail opportunities that the city, county, and landowners can agree on access management and public use.
Okay. Get into the section where it does talk about how to do this.
That's on page 19, the implementation methods that you might be referring to. Since there are like regulatory techniques, read that as applying the way that you're referring.
Regulatory approaches are cost effective because they can control the use of the land without foreign purchase.
And I don't think that the intent of that is talking about public access. That may be talking more to the protection of critical areas.
Non-regulatory uses. Another way to do it in taxation, enough tax on it where the owner gives. I'm saying this is such a small element of the plan. Why even have it in there? Why even talk about ways to try to get the land from these people when it's such a small part of your plan?
I'm not seeing the same language. So if you show me where it...
I can't show it to you. Maybe I'm seeing things that I'm using my background to fill blanks in. I'm just saying that...
Well, it's the top of the paragraph, page 19. Warehouser
for years.
And then if you go to page 20, flip it over, you'll see the regulatory.
People were walking on the roads, riding their horses out there. At some point, they began to claim credit for it because they were keeping the roads in shape. And try as you will, if you allow a use by the public, at some point, they won't find a way to take it. Okay. And so the person that's keeping his rights crystal clear is the guy that put a fence across that trail, that dike.
I get what you're talking about, but the tone in here is wrong.
The tone is aggressive.
Yeah. I don't like that sentence that says regulatory approaches are cost-effective because they can control the use of land without requiring its purchase. That's giving the wrong indication about what the regulation's purpose is. It's not to control the land. It's to protect a particular resource or value. So I agree with you, and I think I want to provide some edits to that language. This is part of just the carryover of the original document, and that's not something that we looked at in a review to this date, but I agree with you.
The owner needs to feel that they have the upper hand at all times, unless the city comes to them with a check. They don't. And if they don't, then I wouldn't even have the discussion about it. That right now it's being used, let sleeping dogs lie, and don't go into this. I mean, it's not worth it. The scope of this plan, that 500,000 feet of dike is not worth all the discussion that's going to come out of this language.
Are you proposing strike the implementation methods?
Yeah.
Or something less than that whole section.
Well, I think what I'll do is I'll bring back some language about what regulatory techniques would be used to achieve. And it's not public access. It's about protection of certain resources on private property.
I actually get concerned when someone reads this and it actually creates ill will at the get-go in what could be a shared negotiation where everybody comes out ahead.
It's very good to find that. It doesn't run through the document until you come to this one spot. And then you go back to the dike issue and realize this is what we're talking about. We're going to create a strip of public land, a private land, and into a public trail.
Well, no, that's not what this is intended for. Mm-hmm. We're not creating regulations to require private property owners to provide public access. However, we do have regulations that protect wetlands against development, and that's protecting the interest of the public for the protection of that wetland. But it's not about public access.
But it is on the dike. It's very clear in here. The discussion is there's been a informal use of a strip of land on that dike across the private land. And it's coupled with the language that the way to keep that in public use is to obtain public use. By either predatory, by non-taxation, or by some other means. Never does it say that the owner has a right not to negotiate or anything.
That's not the intent here.
I know.
I want to rewrite.
I know that. I'm just pointing this out to you that it's really. I came in with an irritation all from the very beginning. Is that this paragraph did this to me? Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to be objective, but this is exactly the thing that I railed against for 20 years. I guess when I was on the other side, it just drives me crazy. Yeah.
Thanks, Dick. That was a good catch.
I'll even help you further to make this simpler. If the paragraph order was different, that would help the concept.
Yeah.
Because the first thing you're doing is coming out guns a-blazing.
Yeah.
And then they mention non-regulatory, and then they mention, oh, why don't we raise taxes to actually buy it? Those three paragraphs are in the wrong concept order.
Yeah. And I'll revise the paragraph order, and then I'm going to be much more clear about the limitations of regulatory techniques.
Somebody in downtown Seattle wrote this, I'm sure. They don't care.
Anybody else have some things before I start on my list?
Oh, clarification. Clarification, looking at page 23. Before we come up with the various estimates of projects, and taking for example the Meadowbrook Farm and Turkey Center, kitchen addition, those kind of things are 50-50 with snowfall. Why is that our share? Is 200 our share, or is that the total cost?
No, the 200,000 is the total cost, and then that would likely be split. Maybe it's a three-way split between the association, City of North Bend, and City of Snoqualmie. But that would be yet to be determined. And this is just a cost estimate of what it would cost to do the project.
I just don't recognize that these costs are divisible. And in any with Meadowbrook Farm, this is a project cost and not the cost of Meadowbrook.
Right.
So maybe you could attach that to all the different estimates and just put a footnote that costs may be shared between multiple organizations.
I don't want to get that level of specificity because this is just about the projects. For any one of these, we're going to be going after grants, we're going to be looking for partnerships. There's a number of different ways to fund the project. So my suggestion would just be to keep the projects as a description of the project.
On page 24 is where I come up with the smoking gun. The South Fork Snoqualmie Left Bank Levee Trail, that's a price of $75,000 on it. We're going to build a trail around the guy's property.
And wasn't that King County's gig? Not us at all? That levee?
The levee is owned by King County.
State in.
The property around it is owned by the city. Okay.
And private parties.
No, just the city of North Bend, except for that one little house on the end.
Okay. You know, the activity around the train station is going to get pretty busy in the next several years. A fellow attended Rotary last week.
Mm-hmm.
He's a carver. He carves merry-go-round horses. He talked about merry-go-round is going to go in right next to the train station.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting. In fact, it's going to be inside of a big building that will open up during the good weather days, it's nice if you come out. You can come out of the building on track. It sounds exciting.
I didn't know anything about this.
It's not even mentioned in your plan when it comes to the railroad enclosure.
I didn't know anything about this.
I don't know if anybody does but him. I think he had Jeff Doyer talking about it.
Oh, okay. He so he's excited. Working with Economic Development Committee.
He's a world rated carver,
mm-hmm.
and he carves merry-go-round horses right here on Mount Si Road.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in an early stage negotiations about building this beautiful carousel that's going to be the destination for the train as it comes out of Snoqualmie to North Bend. It'll be very welcoming. It's all part of the big downtown plaza idea, but it seems like this might be occupying land that maybe has, that you guys have planned for some of the use. But,
around the William Taylor Park, is that what you're thinking right there?
Yeah.
Well, the last that I heard from him is he was talking with the Glaciers about purchase of the property that's Rio Bravo. That's off the table now.
That would be an exciting place to be, right in downtown.
Mm-hmm. But my point, though, is that it's been a private effort. It hasn't been, he hasn't requested that the city become a partner and fund part of it. So that's why it hasn't been considered as a part of this process.
He didn't tell me it was under private discussions. He says he was working on this plan. Like, all of a sudden, bells are going off my head because you got a recovery center that reaches a place. Every demand's quiet, it's a quiet zone. I don't see how that's ever going to survive there if you're going to have a carousel, and which is going to just create a lot of wonderful business for downtown. But we better talk to the Regis people and see if they want to move. And so I'll just drop that. But it sounds like it's a possibility.
You're on a roll, Dick.
Doesn't matter.
Well, we could add it. I mean, later, if he comes, that's a 6-year, 20-year plan, whatever it is, we can put it on there. If we can get something in writing in the city, you know, finalize something. There's certainly room there for it, so.
I like blue saddles.
Okay, if I can direct you all to the edited redline version that was in our packet, is where I made some edits. And I'll start with page 3, which is the beginning, chapter 8, parts of open space element. And I looked at the overview and what was edited, and I get, you know, the condensing, and I agree with that. But it was like the next paragraph down didn't give me a good starting point for an introduction. So I'd like the commission to think about, it would be the paragraph, I think it's the fourth one down after the red line, the city has a good parks, recreational open space system. I find that is more like a introductory kind of paragraph than I do talking about the outdoor recreation opportunities and being more specific.
Okay.
So I would suggest moving that up into the beginning. The paragraph that starts with residents choose to live in North Bend and visitors to travel here, I think you could strike two. Visitors travel.
Yeah, thank you.
I saw one very close to that was it's the last paragraph of the overview. It's the urban growth boundary, UGA, but it's an urban growth area.
Yeah, good catch there.
Mike, you might want to know that I fly the flag at my house, but I raised the white flag today. I can't read this.
The size of the text?
I can't read this text. It's way too small in my eyes.
Part of it is when you put it into redline format,
it's even worse than that. Yeah. We've got to be able to put more paper out that has paper print on it. I just can't read it.
You say you're in the forest reserves? I see. Okay.
I don't understand the reason why it comes loose like that.
Online, you can zoom in and make it as big as you want.
I can't read all this. I could go for a couple pages and I just lose it.
Okay, so going over to page 4. The second paragraph down was struck in its entirety, and it talks about wildlife habitat, trail, park, and other recreational infrastructure. And I guess I was sensitive to wildlife habitat because if I go on the red line version, page 17, the park survey, the second paragraph talks about participants for more parks and wildlife corridors. So if that was something that residents talked about the importance of, I'm kind of wondering, you know, how can we include something about wildlife habitat still in our plan here?
Yeah, there are still a number of sections that describe wildlife habitat. We can add that section back in. The only purpose in deleting it was wildlife habitats described above, as well as park recreation and wildlife habitat and open space needs. And so I was trying to condense.
I guess rural character is the one thing that's different.
So you're suggesting that in the sentence above, it hasn't been struck, the city of North Bend will have, so it starts with given the significant, and it goes on that the city of North Bend will have important after a part within that list there, including some of the stuff that was struck in the event. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I guess you just add in trail.
rural character.
And well, I would insert after the final line, allow North Bend to remain a desirable, and then insert the word rural community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then it's fine to leave that struck.
Okay.
Anybody else on page four? On page five, just the population trends. I assume that's something you guys will update once the final zoning map is approved.
Yeah, we'll have to. Unfortunately, if the numbers change again, we'll have to go back and revisit what that does trickling through our population forecast.
I had a general question as far as the city limits in the urban growth area. Is there other areas that may be annexed?
But nothing beyond the urban growth area. So that's the limit of areas that could be annexed. That's the county has the ability to add to our urban growth area, but we do not. And it's a pretty important process.
Good question.
And we have two representatives.
Two representatives.
At the county level? The council people, there's only one person. For
one person, huge. Is it reviewed
at certain times, regular periods, or?
I think probably at some point in the future, there's going to be a large scale review of the overall Puget Sound area. But otherwise, it's just a piecemeal. Is it appropriate to have this? Right now, the county is under review of adding the golf course to our urban growth boundary. I don't know where that's at in the stage of review.
Well, once it becomes part of the urban growth boundary, then on our zoning map, we can plan what that property would be if it was annexed into the city. And that's how you come up with the overall numbers with the UGA.
Is there a developer behind that one?
Yes, I don't know. We haven't been really part of the process.
Page six on the edited version under wildlife habitat. The last paragraph, wildlife include the more common forest species. I didn't find another section where we kind of talked about it. I don't know if all that is still accurate, if we have all those species, but I thought it was page six on the edited red line version under wildlife habitat, B3, and it was the last paragraph. So I don't know if you can give me some understanding of why it was taken out.
I deleted that just because it seems somewhat self-evident. We have habitat areas and they're going to include the common forest species. We could leave it if you prefer.
I certainly know we have mice, deer, and elk. I didn't know we had weasel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ground squirrels.
A lot of rabbits.
Not all of them. So, I'm just saying, I thought I knew, but I still learned something with that little bit.
And they're being driven out of Snoqualmie Ridge, so they need some,
I think I can provide a little insight on the issue on page 25, where it talks about encouraging the county to buy lands and that's there. That are adjacent to sensitive lands along the river. In the Rural Forest Commission, we had a presentation by the woman who manages the inventory of county parks and rural spaces. They're dealing with the issue now that the county's feeling saturated with protected areas. They may not have the budget they used to have to go out and buy private land for protection. We may have to find some other way to do that. Just a heads up on that. I don't think they have as much of a budget for acquiring strips of land like these. but it's all good. Because for us, when I read this plan, thousands upon thousands of acres that we claim as natural areas that we can protect and manage, we shouldn't be too worried about these small pieces, but they're good to look at and keep, maybe keep the greenway, be able to touch these pieces for our benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, this plan still does call for just over 80 acres of additional open space based on our level of service standard. Yeah. So we'll be looking for different ways to acquire those in appropriate areas. Yeah. So areas that otherwise aren't suitable for development, that have wildlife habitat, et cetera.
I just think that here's where we're all going to see money drying up for acquiring these other spots.
Crowdsourcing.
Okay, I go all the way to page 14 of the redline version for my next question.
Before we leave that first one, though, did you were you suggesting that we leave that text about the wildlife?
Or find some way to make that paragraph work smartly. I thought it was good information. I don't think it is self-evident, especially with all the new people moving to our town who are not from a rural area.
Did you guys speak with Hancock about including them in this plan?
They're listed in the plan as a nearby recreation.
Yeah, but Harry talked to them about that.
No.
I'm sure I should talk to them about being included, because they at will can just shut down the entire tree farm from any recreational. You should know that. And just they wouldn't want to be locked into it because it's sitting. You do make it clear that it's at will. I mean, you have the right to close it, but you're including a big chunk of land, I think, just to add another 100,000 acres into the total. But I don't think it's.
But what's page are you on?
So I'm on page 14
of the redline version. It's under C10, other regional areas and facilities.
I did add some language about it, that it's subject to permit access. It's not just general open public.
I think it stretches your credulity to include a big block of private land like that as a recreational opportunity when it's tenuous at best.
We could delete it.
I can't speak for them. If I was the warehouser guy, I wouldn't want to leave.
I've heard of hunters gaining access to the property.
Sure, they do. They get hunting passes.
So I consider that as a recreational opportunity that we could list. As long as they follow the site here, they'll get the permit.
Mountain biking trails and caught by this.
What I'm saying, guys, is ask.
It's not the city's job to promote.
Ask and you shall receive, but don't just put it in there. I think you
deserve it. What I did is I referenced their website. So they offer permits for recreational access.
Please. Yep. Just listen to me. Just do the favor. When you're giving the private people, ask their permission to be included in these plans. These plans have a shelf life of a zillion years. I'm just saying. In 5 years now, it could be somebody other than Hancock. You know, they aren't obligated to own that land. I think you ought to just talk to them and see what they say about being included. If they are all for it, yahoo, get them in there. But I'm sure we're clear with them. This is my advice.
You could email them just that paragraph and say, yeah, hey, it's a this.
Let me put you in contact with the forestry in charge. He's on the World Forest Commission, too. I'd be happy to talk to him.
So my comment on page 14, when you're done, Mike, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Sorry I didn't have a chance to get you the data, but on the Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest down the Middle Fork Road, there's something like 48 or 55 camping sites, and I think we ought to mention that somewhere in there.
Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest. What page are you on?
On page 14, yeah.
Okay. Can we just say something about dispersed camping is available throughout the national forest?
It's not dispersed. It's an actual camping ground that you have to get a permit for.
Okay.
And, yes, there's dispersed ones. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the ones that they market.
Here, you sparked my memory. I did make a comment on the copy before the red line. And then Plan missed out on those two small hydro projects by Wally and Twin Falls. Those are fascinating to walk to and to read about and to watch them generate power right there at your feet. And on page 10, where you mentioned Twin Falls and Wally State Park, it's easy to add a sentence on both of those to visit the small hydro that's on both of those as you walk to the end of the Wally Trail. There's a falls called Weeks Falls. It's a beautiful fall. And there it is, collecting water and pushing it through a tube and generating.
Good idea.
I mean, it's perfect. And they have an educational sign there. Yeah. It's totally open. It's all part of the walk, and it's a destination for some of the people that walk that little trail. And those who are a little more hardy go down to Twin Falls, the same thing. There's a small hydro there. It's a run-the-river kind of a thing. It's what they're trying to build in North Fork right now. Same kind of thing. It's around the river where it just catches it, spins it, and it puts it right back in the river.
That's good.
And,
yeah.
And these things are good to see because not only educational, but they're the way of the future. You can take water out of the river, use it, and put it right back in within 10 minutes.
All good. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool.
Where is the Runner River plant at Twin Falls? I'm just curious. I don't.
Well, as you're, you can get to it by going into on the Wedgwick Road, and I believe it may be the second left.
But it's within the park.
Hmm?
It's within the park.
It's in the end of the park.
Okay.
It was. It came in from that little community up there that was cut off by the freeway. You may name somebody. They got about 10 homes back there, just between the I-90 and.
What are you talking about on the north side of I-90?
It started on the north side of I-90, and went under I-90 where the falls is, and then they have.
And there's public access.
They have a hydro at the bottom. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all open. And they're educational. They all have science that describes what they are and the volume and all that kind of thing.
Cool.
Anybody else?
I just wonder what Jim commented on about disc golf. Is there something we can put in here?
Yeah, we do have on our 20-year plan, and possibly also on this year. But on the 20-year plan, we do describe providing disc golf at Middlebrook Farm.
Providing what? I'm sorry?
The golf.
Oh, frisbee golf.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's an awesome game. I didn't know what I was looking at. That's the White Center.
You know what? It may not be there.
In the shortened version?
Parks. They have a nice disc golf, frisbee golf at Sunkey.
Because I remember we had talked about
that. Absolutely. Yeah, we just missed it.
Nice maps of, you know, the course.
I'm going to add that on. I know that was a part of our commission.
It was, absolutely.
Well, if you're thinking about the National Park Service and the little things they have where you can just get your stickers for each one, kind of a passport to give you all the kids. And we have so many opportunities out here. We almost even have an equivalent.
When I read, I didn't wait. I drove around Bumper Valley reading this document. I was mesmerized by it. And we have so many things that we all take for granted. And we should be having some kind of a map or a brochure. And that's
I thought the visitors.
Me too. I thought there was something with the visitor convention.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
just
saying that the ideas like geocaching and that kind of thing. Have at the visitor center a map that you can pick up that has all of these different parks and, and things like the hydro dam, and come into our visitor center with a photo showing that you've been there, and we'll give you a sticker. It encourages people to come back. I mean, it's a really simple thing to do, and it may sound a little bit stupid. I think about how ridiculously excited that I saw people getting guys at the national parks up and down the East Coast, and adults and kids just like, oh, to get their little stamp and this little passport that they're putting out. It's just a piece of, it's a brochure that's stapled together that shows each of the national parks. And they swear the kids in as rangers. Something that would bring, I'm thinking, repeat business. Mm-hmm. A reason to come back out, a way to make it a little bit fun, a way to let them know about everything that we have, these opportunities that are out here.
How about an EDC?
I think the EDC needs this one.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But
yeah.
This is a,
that's a great idea.
It would work, and yes, there are more. There are more people out here, and if they come out here, sometimes they stop for lunch. And hopefully, if they're hiking here, they'll stop
anyway. When they build a boat, they get a few nights stay wherever
they want. Well, I wonder if we could work for that, you know, some sort of deal, not for something like that, for like a coffee or something. Most of them are just happy to get the sticker. I mean, I was really surprised at how excited people were getting over something that simple.
At the mayor's joint. Right now. Mayor's burger. You used to have a mayor's burger. Thanks for telling me. You should be able to make it.
So, Mike, I'm not rushing. Does anybody have any further questions or comments? Go ahead,
Judy.
Yes.
The fact that I've been so quiet tonight tells you that's a good thing. Thank you.
I'm waiting for the rewrite.
I just think this is an awesome piece of work.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Go ahead, Curtis.
I had a question again about the survey results. This is a statewide survey. I'm going to read that again.
Statewide?
The 2012 statewide survey results. I'm on page 18 under outdoor recreation trends. So E2. You see the top ones were picnicking, barbecuing, and cooking out. Although walking. And it sounded like there was kind of a decrease in the level of activity from the previous survey. I'm wondering, I guess, which is kind of surprising when you look at the rise of physical fitness and health. And
what do you mean by the decrease in activities?
And relative declines in participation in team activities. So the previous sentence. Mm-hmm.
So team activities would be more your
soccer, baseball,
soccer.
Yeah. I guess I was just, you know, in looking at that, and then looking at all the different things that we're advertising, I guess, how much is this a factor in that? I guess I'm probably answering my own question, you know, that it's not much because we seem to be emphasizing more of the outdoor recreation stuff. But like, what were the options in the survey? Like, looking at picnicking, barbecuing, and cooking out, I don't categorize that as like an outdoor activity. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's something that's done out of doors, but it is not like, it's not the same level as hiking, it's not on the same level as fishing, biking, you know, enjoying trails that were like them to establish my North Bend. So I guess maybe I'm wondering about its relevance.
I think in outdoor recreation trends and like my observations, when you go to parks and you see large families or just families, they're barbecuing and they're playing volleyball or horseshoes or whatever, or they're at Rattlesnake Lake and they're barbecuing and fishing. And I think it's a comprehensive. I don't see it as just that's what they do there. I think there's more to what they do at the park. And I think that you're looking at the larger picture of park usage than just the physical fitness aspect of it.
What I got from that is that this is something that's informing when we're deciding how we're deciding something. If we see a decrease in the number of people that are participating in the team sports, is that where we want to spend the bulk of the money that we have? Or do we want to spend it in these other areas, trail improvements, expanding opportunities for biking and walking, those things that we're seeing as trends in the area. So I actually thought it was one of the things that went, okay, yeah, that kind of explains where we're focusing on other areas. Because do we want to spend all of the money on building a really nice sports field that's actually going to be used by a small portion of the population versus something that is going to
okay.
Yeah.
I think we have the passive parks. I know Torgerson is often used for family gatherings. They'll come over and put up their tents, and they bring out the barbecues. The kids are running, they're climbing, they're over the thing. So there are, that is an element. But along with that, then we need to make sure we have benches, and then we have the garbage cans. So there's a certain, that's what people do in parks. And is it, do we, you know, need to add that? I think we've got pretty good open space. I think a more, that's an active park. But EJ is certainly a little quieter, and there is people, I mean, we barbecue over there as a parks department. So, you know, there, we have that element too. And I, even though it's declining, I'm like you. I'm not quite sure that's an outdoor activity, but it is a gathering spot, and that's what parks are for.
Okay, so this and is park specific.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And we do have
these lots.
Yeah, and it's something people want in their parks. Mm-hmm. You know? So whether it's sitting under a tree, reading a book, that's the open space concept. Maybe they're all not going to hike, but they want a park. So yeah. Yeah.
The piece that I got out of that same point was a comment statewide. So if you survey the state, you're going to get overarching detail from the populace, the densities, and this is probably right on spot for a high density area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They don't have running trails. They don't have open, huge parks. So I almost want to look at that and go, well, that's just not really applicable.
And that's why we went from state to Sidey District to City of North Bend, so we get the broad perspective of how it filters down to our contents.
Without a definition page, I get the feeling that in this plan, there's not a clear distinction between hiking and walking. I don't know what's intentional, but it seems like...
Should there be?
Hiking has hills. Hiking, you're going, you're right. Changing grade, and right. Walking free a level right. Activity. Some people power walk, they wear weights, and they just
right.
Go out on the trail on the railroad grade, and they'll do a power walk, and that's
right.
A walk. Not be vigorous, but hiking is usually you're changing elevation.
Right. So we should put that in there. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if it seems to be used interchangeably in here. Sometimes you have hiking and walking in the same selection of activities, and sometimes it's just walking.
In terms of things walking. That we can provide in North Bend, though, we don't have a topography or the type of character to provide true hiking trails. We've got walking paths. Like our loop out at Colgate Farm Park is an example.
Well, I'm talking about in this program again, we've put all the Forest Service, the state, all the state lands, Mount Si, all that. The difference between walking up Mount Si and hiking up Mount Si.
Strolling includes a beverage or something.
That's not challenging.
So your ask is just
have them
review the plan and make sure when we're talking
about
hiking.
I read the big print. I didn't read your mark, but I saw a lot of walking and hiking. And sometimes I just thought that hiking was left alone without the walking. But when it was still walking opportunities, whenever you have you could walk the Snowball or the John Wayne Trail up around Rattlesnake, and then you can also hike Rattlesnake. One's walking, one's hiking.
Yeah.
And we're talking about in this document forever. All the spots around North Bend is illustrated things that can be done in the area, which is great.
So you got that? Just make sure we got.
But I'm just wondering if we are if the terminology is being used interchangeably, or if it's intentional to have walking grades, level grade.
I think the idea would be walking level grade, and I can check through the document to see if it's consistent with descriptions of hiking for more of your, Mount Si and those kinds of things.
I had the feeling that it was being used interchangeably without
too much
detail. Okay.
All right. Curtis, did you have anything else? Anybody else? Mike, what are we looking at for our next steps for this?
So that's a question that I wanted to ask you guys. We've got, we couldn't schedule the hearing for the next Planning Commission meeting just because of timing. We didn't have enough time to notice it 10 days ahead. So it's scheduled for the 22nd. I don't think there's anything else that we have on your agenda for your next Planning Commission meeting. So we could continue your review on this at that meeting if you wish, or we could cancel that meeting and just pick up your review after the public hearing on the 22nd, depending on your interest.
We've talked an awful lot about performance standards. Anything in your bandwidth that we could do that at our next meeting? Start a review of, or start drafting out constrained low density performance standards.
I don't know that we have anything in mind for that. That would have to be more of a conversational thing to get the direction from the Planning Commission, what your interests are in developing further performance standards.
Well, could we plan that for the next meeting over here?
We could.
Unless you want October off.
It'll just bite us somewhere around December.
I like it's the first time we've seven.
So what are you looking for through that then? Do you want the Planning Commission to have just the existing performance standards and you would come with comments about things that you'd like to address?
Okay. Yeah, that would be a good plan.
Do we have anything that's coming up before the end of the year that we need to deal with? That's the other way to look at it, right?
The key thing is to get through the parks element and any edits to the zoning code relating to the comp plan. So that would be the limited or the constrained low density residential.
So the parks piece, have we not just gone through it?
Well, you've gone through your first round of review tonight, and then we'll have the public hearing. And then I'm hoping after the public hearing and any additional comment based on the public comment, you then be ready to make a recommendation.
But that's on the 22nd.
Yeah.
So you're at rest about the 8th meeting?
Well, no, I'm just thinking about the parks. So if there's public hearing in our venue, didn't that affect the Parks Commission's review?
Yeah, I've invited them to be at that public hearing. That's just the course of review. So the Parks Commission or the Economic Development Commission would first make their recommendation on the particular document. Then it's brought forward to the Planning Commission. Public hearing is typically held at the Planning Commission. And then it moves on to council from there.
So we don't get it back?
No.
After the public hearing?
No.
We get it back, so to speak.
If you guys,
if
there's substantial edits that you feel should be reconsidered by the Parks Commission,
I'm promoting no more cooks in the kitchen. Public hearing coming.
I think
we don't have a meeting on the 8th, and this is our chance to have a commission vote on this.
Right.
On this document.
Well, your vote on this document wouldn't be until after the public hearing.
Yeah, okay.
Then to add something, just so I don't miss out later, one of the things that I brought up months ago, and I remember you saying this would be the appropriate time, and I certainly saw a lot of reference to it, and there was trails, right, and creating more of an intentional, interconnected network. One of the things I liked about the area of goals and goals and policies was there were certain amounts of accountability reporting back to the city council. And I guess this may be a question more directed for the commission. Is it, there's a huge priority list in here that, you know, is a ton of money.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and with that in mind, has there been much talk among the commission or on the commission of that network of trails? With a specific deadline, with specific national grants in mind, to interconnect not only the ones. Obviously we have the Snoqualmie Valley Trail, but then there's also the Levee Trail on the South Fork. There's the new ones out at the. I always mix those two up.
Tollgate
Farm. A lot of them are starting to grow. And, you know, and hopefully with the Pulte development, there might be some there connecting them with Blue Hole. I don't know, there's private landowner ownership. But is it the intention of the commission, you know, to at some point in the next 6 years, have an established network of trails, both paved and...
It's certainly a goal. And if we could plan our community and nobody here, we could say, we'll put the trail here, the trail there, you know. So whenever possible... And we've talked about that a lot, because that in the survey in the city, when we had it here, that there was a lot of stickers that went there, and they loved, I loved, we all, I mean, that was a big deal. Very important was to get trails and connecting trails in and around town. And like I say, there's pieces that you just, you know, it's a tough connect. But that certainly is a priority that we have, and we have a bridge that we're going to do at Tollgate that will connect one piece to the other out there. And that is on there for a what we're going to call a decision card for cost-wise that we have to put to the commission. So it's one piece in getting the connectivity. Is that a word, connectivity? Yeah, it sounds like it is, yeah. Dennis, yeah. Anyway, that is one piece of getting the toll gate piece connected. And there's another piece of the Tanner Trail. There's a couple of lots out there that we're trying to... Yeah, that would be something we'd want to do, too. But, again...
It looks like it's a priority list that fades into a wish list.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
But considering from the sound of it, you know, this does sound like a high priority for locals. Would you guys be open to more aggressive language with a more definitive time frame on that? Maybe a little bit more... requiring the city council to hopefully, you know, put this higher on their list and allocate more money from other places.
I don't know. Can we, as an advisory, can we make it stronger on that, Mike? I don't know the feel of that.
You can make a policy as strong as you want. It's the council will then review it.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean anything unless there's the funds to implement
it. Right.
That's always the challenge.
Right.
I guess my hope with that would be that with more aggressive language coming from, you know, both the Planning Commission and the Parks Commission, that they would listen to that, and because they have access to far more funds, well, they have access to funds, and they're responsible for allocating that, you know, maybe they take it from one thing and put it to something that seems to have a higher...
Well, with your support, if it comes from us and then you give it a stamp too... that I think that has some a little more weight than just one group doing it. And so I don't have a problem with adding some stronger language to get those pieces together on that.
Well, in this trail idea, there's an opportunity for the developer to, rather than build these pocket parks in the community, to donate money that would have gone into that, into a trail network. That's going to go around it. I think that's a great win-win. I think all these pocket parks are useless.
Side view.
Yeah. But using the money that would have gone into those little pocket parks into a trail that would connect their development with other trails, I think is a wise use of those funds.
Is that something that goes back to your house first?
There's a number of different ways that private developments contribute to public park improvements. So there's park impact fee revenue. So every single-family home and every multi-family home contribute a certain amount, 4,000 something for a single-family, 3,000 something for a multi-family. And that goes to fund the projects that are on the six-year park improvement.
Yeah.
That's this list here. And that's where Parks Commission and you guys are saying, yes, this is our priority. And then if the council adopts that, those are the projects that are funded by that park impact fee revenue. The other way is we have our trail plan network, and that's the map that you see in figure 8.2. And anywhere that you see a trail that goes over an area of private property, the way that our regulations are set up is that a residential development would then, if it's showing a trail crossing that private property, when they go to develop a residential development, they would have to construct that segment of trail. So that's extending and connecting the network. A third thing is they have their on-site park requirements, so that's the mini parks. But as a part of that, they can also provide off-site improvements to contribute to other benefits. So for example, the John Day Ranger Station Cottages, which is next to Torgerson Park, instead of doing a mini park, which would not be very useful,
they instead provided a trail that would connect, or a new parking lot at the northeast corner of Tourism Park, with a trail that would come down into the new plaza area and construct a new picnic shelter in Tourism Park, instead of doing the mini park on their site. Yeah. So there's a lot of ways that you can get.
So there are, we have tried to do a little bit different than just, like you say, the little pocket parks. We've tried to spread it out a little bit. And with Polte, when we were working with them, we realized the need for this multi-court. We have a youth advisor on our Parks Commission, and that's a good thing, because we may lose track of what a certain age group would like to see in our parks.
Well, so that's how the inline skates got into the list of uses out there on trails. I've never saw an inline skater on a trail, but I guess they do.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we were talking about a court, and he said, well, we like to play volleyball, and I didn't even know there was a high-low net thing that you could do. And so Polte said, oh, yeah, they would do that right near EJ. So now we have that court, and they said they would do it. So I was thrilled, and he even said he put a park bench in or two. So, we got to finagle a little bit on when they come to, and they do get invited to the Parks Commission. So we do have an opportunity to go one-on-one with some of the developers. I mean, Mike and Lynn have brought them in, so we do have a chance to look them right in the eye and say, in addition to a pocket park, something else we'd like you to do.
And the Parks Commission is looking back to see what are we missing.
Right. So what can we get? Yeah, a little bit more. And so this idea of a little more of the trail, that will really open up that piece, though, when that swales and that sports court and stuff, multi-purpose court, sorry, I used the wrong language, along with EJ, the connection there to the trail and then to Torgerson will be a wonderful addition.
So a sports park, I have those words underlined, I've never heard that term before. It's a multi-purpose park.
It's multi-purpose court.
And actually, I'll throw another level.
Okay.
In the Northwest, we have a game called pickleball.
Yes.
It's kind of vaporized.
Yeah.
But that's the lowest level of the net.
yes, there you go. So, and those courts, really, the kids, I mean, Ethan was really excited, and he gave us a lot of input on that, and it was very helpful. So, by reaching out to that age group, I think we'll do a good job there for that element of our thing. And get back to the trail. If we could do something like that, that's any trade-off that we can do with the developers. They're anxious to come out here. They have people that want to move out here. So, I think they'll. It's worth a conversation, that's for certain, for sure.
Is there something you want to do?
Should I come back with some recommendations? Is that something that
if you, want
you
to,
guys will do?
Yeah, if you want to suggest, you want to suggest it.
Okay. I don't know if my timeline is going to be reasonable, but I'll throw some of the things out there from 2 minutes to next meeting.
Okay. That, by the way, I think 10 years ago, when I was on parks, the trails were a hot topic.
They still are.
Still are, as they should be, until we get it done.
Looking at this map, I mean, if we got half of those, we'd be doing really
well. Keep in mind that at some point, trails need maintenance.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. We don't have a parks department. We have public works. So we actually took a bicycle ride, the Parks Commission, in August, and we visited every one of the parks in the evening. And that was a real eye-opener. We all had a chance to, and Mike said, say whatever you want to say. So we didn't bash him, but we said, we need a working drinking fountain here. We made a nice list, and we actually saw what was going on in the parks between, what time was it, around 6?
Yeah.
We saw nobody at EJ. Torgerson Skate Park was packed, and of course we roll up there on our bikes and we look like the patrol coming in, and they all froze. And thank goodness two of the people on the Parks Commission, the young kids, so we all skate, so they talked to everybody, and so we didn't look so threatening. But it was very interesting, and we just had to understand really what was needed in our parks and what was going on in our parks. Where? Do you want it lit? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't, because I live across the street, but I think people would probably use it more if it were.
I think waist level lighting is one thing. 20, 40-foot towers is a different.
If it closes, it doesn't.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Let's leave it at that.
Well, and you know, it's getting a lot better, but I also think that there's still some residual. For a while, it wasn't really hard to get.
Absolutely.
So that goes to my question, are we naming our trails?
We have the Bolts Trail in Meadowbrook Farm. At Meadowbrook Farm, we have named trails. We've got.
I don't know where it would be appropriate to create.
Company who owns the land?
No, I'm talking about construction standards for our trails. Something that says that the names will be posted at so distance along each trail, or that we'll have mile markers. And so what I've understood from law enforcement is somebody calls and the person is on a trail, they don't know where to find them on the trail. And it's a 3-mile window of missed opportunity. So however we can try and create some identifiable points within the trail or fitness points number X, so it's not just mile marker one, you know, something that we have a name and an identifiable point like every quarter mile or something.
Yeah, and you know, if you're a trail walker, you walk five back, you like to know where that 5-mile mark is, whatever it is. That makes that trail useful more than just.
Mm-hmm. One of the most common things that comes up on the local Facebook groups is, do you know how long that walk is? I just did it and I'm not sure how long it was because anyone measured it. So if there was some way for people to check that.
Yeah.
Does King County have it on there on the trail at all?
King County's already on that.
Yeah. Are they?
There's segments I know for sure. Duval, Carnation.
Yeah.
Except
they always get vandalized.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
Yeah, well, they also get run over by their own lawnmowers.
At least they're mowing.
The fiberglass strip sits up off the trail. It's a mile marker.
Yeah.
We're getting close to our stop time for our agenda.
I have more need to buy 5 minutes.
I have just one question. There was a mention of road bicycling or road riding. And I don't know if this plan addresses that at all.
That's primarily addressing our transportation element. So that's describing providing bike lanes within our roads.
Didn't we pass a motion on the Planning Commission that if it was 4 foot wide something, that we would make that a bike lane without?
Sorry.
Okay, the buildable lands report, just thank the planning department for giving us an updated list. I appreciate that. I have a question, maybe, Mike, on number 17, Genie Industries paving storage expansion site review and SEPA issued on 8/20/2014.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there's a comment period or anything?
That's passed because the SEPA was the comment period.
Okay.
But if you have questions or whatever, feel free to ask those. Come on in and take a look at the plans.
I just have an opinion. Okay. Anybody else on the buildable lands? Or planning?
I know somebody who had 15,000 in the North Bend. They just, there has a biggest office.
I'm sorry,
I said, I was talking to a few friends of mine about North Bend, about 15,000 people. And I couldn't believe it that we had that kind of future out here. I said, I intend to be alive when it gets there. I think that's the thing that's coming. We're going back and up, coming down 98. So, it's good to see that future.
Good in the odor, anybody?
I do want to say thank you very much for all your comments. It's really helpful.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really helpful.
Next time we'll bring them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
I do want to ask the Planning Commission what your interest is for the next meeting. So that October 8th, I think it is. Do you want to cancel that or do you want to keep going on this? Or you had mentioned the
cottage standards. That's the only thing I can think of other than talking about our urban growth boundary. That's one of my things. Transportation
so
element.
You've got almost a month to figure whatever happened. And the public hearing is when?
Public hearing will be on the 22nd.
And our proposed next meeting is?
On the 8th. So we can continue with this. I can bring back some edits to this. And then we can have just conversational about the performance standards to see what edits that you'd like to tackle in the coming year.
And we're going to get this back after the public hearing, right?
Yeah, you'll continue your deliberation after.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out why we'd want to see it again before the public hearing.
No.
No. Okay.
I'm talking about talking about cottage or constrained residential. I hate that it has a C.
We missed a couple of meetings because of other higher pressures. Well, we must have something planned for those meetings we canceled.
So I'd be happy to defer to Mike between now and the next, the 8th. Right, that's what you said, 8th?
Mm-hmm.
If there's something to put on the agenda that's worth that you need us to talk about so that the train keeps moving, I don't know, but I'm excited about having a meeting just to be here for 15 minutes and shoot the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's something...
There's nothing that I'm aware of that we need to do at the moment that's pressing. This needs to move forward, but we have to wait until the 22nd.
Right.
The same thing for the constrained loaded city residential.
So is it the public hearing, is that all that's being discussed? Is the parks open?
We'll have a parks element hearing, and then we'll also have the constrained loaded city residential hearing.
And you, we always have no idea when people will show up, right?
Never know.
So likely we're going to be at the public hearing. It's going to be our next time we're together.
Yeah. So other than that, we do have a little bit of a window. So whatever you want to do with the 8th, we could either cancel or we could talk about performance standards.
I would vote for performance standards. I just know it's got to be done. If we can add to another meeting, and it also goes to your bandwidth. So whatever you guys got going. First, can you tell me what happened last night, two nights ago, at the work study?
I was not at the work study, so I don't have first-hand knowledge, but I understand that they're still evaluating a number of the different areas.
So for the Planning Commission, I was at the City Council meeting where they talked about the land use map. Between what we had voted on in past, they had expanded constrained residential into a couple of different areas and also changed high density back to cottage. So there was quite a large gathering at that meeting. A lot of the people who, I guess, had been assessed constrained residential
freaking out.
Yeah.
That angle.
Or, you know, had comments. But then other people talked about density, talked about why only Employment Park was on the east side of town and the west side of town, there's nothing in the center. So, which I look at our map and I don't see it the same. It went back to work study, and that was this Tuesday night?
Yeah. So from what I understand, they've asked staff to bring different options to them to their next council meeting, in which they'll discuss this and pick the option that they want to move forward with.
So my notice to the commission is pay attention to their calendar if you have comments or suggestions for them. And go to the city council meeting and voice them.
I think that's always very helpful to have representation from our Parks Commission and our Planning Commission and our EDC at council meetings, so they to recognize the very high level of effort that you guys have put into all these plans and recommendations. That's important for them to see.
Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion. Motion by Dick. Second?
Sure.
Second by Jim. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 We are adjourned at 9:09. Thank you all for a great meeting.
See you guys next year.
Thank you all for